Over and out.
Okay. Thanks. So that, excuse me, I have to get back to my agenda screen. All right. That brings us to number six on the agenda, which is report from the executive director. Stephanie, are you ready?
Yes.
And we have, Stephanie, again, we have 30 minutes for this. As you know, you take as much or as little of that as you need or want, and, you know, we'll adjust accordingly.
Thank you. I want to clarify, I think when I was asked earlier how many months behind we were on a loan, my brain was thinking FJC, and I don't know if you would ask about FJC or the idle. So I will correct whatever comment I had made, because then when you started talking about idle, I realized I think I answered FJC. So my apologies for thinking of another loan. With the FJC loan, we are 2 months behind on those payments. We had a payment that was due March 31st and another payment that was due June 30th. With the idle funds, we are behind by 3 months. So the payments for those are roughly $8,731 a month, and we currently owe $26,000, give or some change after that.
So Stephanie, if I may interject.
3 months for idle.
Stephanie, may I interject, Stephanie?
Yes.
I think the question was at our last meeting, which was late in
June.
Yeah, thank you. How late, how many payments behind on the idle loan were we then?
Okay, well, then technically it would have been one for FJC and two for idle.
Yeah, it was two for idle. Got it. I'm sorry for interjecting. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. So now it's two FJC, three idle.
Right.
As far as the CPB grant, we haven't heard anything yet from CPB, so we're still waiting. I believe that they are planning on making their announcement somewhere around September, October, and any sort of funding, if received from that, would occur that following fiscal year. Well, not, it would be in our current fiscal year, but would be in the year 2024 calendar year. We are, I've met with all the general managers and the division directors, and we are looking across the board at all the divisions for ways to decrease expenses and working on increasing our revenue as well, whether that be through, we are still under discussion for the possibility of national fund drives, but we just need to get everybody on board to participate in that. But we are looking at different ways to decrease the expenses across the network as well, and we are looking to do that in order to redirect any of the funds that we would save from some of that decrease of our expenses and redirect those funds to cover the election costs and the upcoming audit costs. We still don't have the ability to pay for either of those. And so we are, as I said, looking for ways to find funds to cover that. We still will get the audit done. I would like to get it done sooner than later. So that's why we're looking at ways to find that funding in order to cover those. And as I said, with the general managers, we did discuss some of those fundraisers, national fund drives if possible, to help cover some of the health benefit costs and the audit costs. So the general managers and the program directors will be talking about that and determining ways if we can do some sort of fund drive for that. I don't have anything else major to cover. We made our payroll for this last pay period. Again, we are, you know, always trying to keep on top of that with cash flow to determine how we will, to make sure that we have the funds that are necessary for the next upcoming payroll. We have three offers on the KPFK building, so we counter-offered those, so we are just waiting for word from that. And that's it on my side.
That's it for your report, Stephanie. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I want to make a quick question. We made payroll, are you saying, for the 30th of June, or and how do we look for the 15th?
We made payroll for the checks that covering the work that was done through June 30th, but the paychecks will be arriving July 15th. So that payroll, people will be getting paid on July 15th. We are monitoring now the cash flow and determining what we will be able to cover and hopefully be able to cover with payroll for that fall, for the end of the payment that is due at the end of this month.
Understood. That is good news, right?
Yeah.
Very good news. Teresa for the stack.
Kamau to the stack.
Okay. Let me see. Yeah. Okay. I got Teresa, Kamau. Anyone else?
Sharon, I said it first.
Oh, okay. Sharon, Teresa, Kamau. Go ahead, Sharon.
Beth.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I got you,
okay.
Beth. Go ahead.
I just have a quick question. Thank you, Stephanie, again. But I maybe didn't hear you properly, but you said national fund drive to cover, did you say health benefits?
Yes, the expenses that we have quite a few aged payables, but the ones that are of a great concern is past due health benefits for the employees, the continuing costs for the current delegate elections, and the audit.
Okay. I kind of in shock, honestly, that we're going to have a national fund drive to cover health benefits. And I am going to make the point that KPFA has fully paid its health benefits and always does. Also, I just wanted to ask, I was looking over my notes from the last meeting, and I recall that you had said the aged payables are $2.3 million, and I guess I would like an update on what they are now. But in addition, you had said that the general counsel expenses aren't included in there, and actually, technically, they should be, because, of course, he's not management. He's a consultant of Pacifica. So I would like to have the full aged payables that are due right now, if you have that information.
The aged payables that were submitted to the board of directors at the PNB at the last meeting in my EV report were $2,007,023 were the aged payables that did not include any unpaid central services.
And that does not include the payments owed to the general counsel. Is that right?
Correct.
So can you include those, perhaps, so we can know what's
yes.
actually owed?
Yes, I can get an updated bill from our general counsel as to what we owe him. And as far as the health benefits, you are correct. KPFA has funds their health benefits on a regular basis, as does KPFK and the archives.
Okay, thank you
Teresa
so much. Those are my
Teresa for the stack.
Hold on a second, Teresa. I just wanted to ask Stephanie, the last number I think we heard for the general counsel was 150,000. Does that remind you of where that might be?
It could be. I mean, I don't want to pinpoint anything without running, you know, without getting that bill, because there's the monthly retainer
Understood.
That we pay, correct?
That's
and then
right.
there's additional expenses that may be on top of that
right.
for hours worked above and beyond what that retainer covers.
But I'll just, for Sharon's benefit, and I realize it's not enough, but it was 150,000 the last time it was publicly discussed. Yeah,
and
Teresa, you're all right.
I also want to add, too, that KPFT is not behind on any health benefits because we don't have employees that have health benefits there.
All right.
I'm sorry, Stephanie. Could you repeat that?
KPFT does not owe any money for health benefits either. So there are no health benefits that are due for KPFA, KPFK, KPFT, or the archives.
What about the affiliates?
There is health benefit funds that are that we are behind in paying those.
I'd like to say something. I am somewhat concerned too. I would have a hard time if a pitch was given to me telling the whole world that we're not paying our health benefits and we have to have a special fund drive to raise money for health benefits. It just looks irresponsible. And I guess I'll follow that. I could easily see a fund drive to raise money for the elections, for example. And in the past, when we were sending out mailers, when we sent out the ballots by mail, you could easily say, you want to put something in this envelope? It's not going to affect the way we count your vote, but would you like to contribute toward the election? And to me, that made sense. It made a lot of sense. Now, our election supervisor has said, you know, she doesn't feel it's her responsibility to raise money. But if we, that to me, and I thought we had the money for this election. I thought we were told that there were people who had donated to pay for this election. If I understand you correctly, this fund drive is going to be to pay health benefits only. That's it. Not for the audit, not for the elections, but for health benefits.
We discussed having a national fund drive, and the three main bills that we are looking at that are of concern are health benefits, elections, and the audit. That doesn't mean that there will be a fund drive for the health benefits or the election or the audit. It's determining what would be the easiest or the most effective thing to be able to raise funds for. We had some of the general managers at our monthly meeting that said it would be easy to raise money for health benefits. We had others that say it would be easy to raise money for the audit. So it wouldn't be something that would necessarily say we're here to raise money for health benefits. We would have to look at it further and discuss it. And to me, it would seem most likely to do the elections or the audit. We would have
to audit.
Explain,
keep us honest. Pay for the audit.
Right.
Teresa,
Teresa,
please let Stephanie finish her sentences before you.
Yeah. You know,
well,
a lot of that would be being able to explain, you know, being able to explain and having people explain to the individual, you know, to our listeners why we do an audit and how it keeps us in compliance and all of that. So, but then also it would be a matter of what stations are willing to participate in that national fund drive, what would be programming for that national fund drive. And when we've attempted national fund drives in the past, in the last year, we've attempted three of them, and none of them none of them worked as far as raising funds for the national office because not all the stations participated. So then it became fund drives for those individual stations. So when I met with the general managers, you know, I said if that's something that would happen and not everyone can participate, then, you know, hopefully we would be able to earmark those funds that are raised during that time to help offset the central service payments. And it's through those central service payments that in the past we pay for the health benefits, because we have to pay for health benefits a month in advance. So in, you know, historically, the national office covers the cost of all the health, you know, of health benefits, and then it's a reimbursable payment that's coming in from the stations through their central service payments, and then the central service payments have also in the past covered for the elections and have covered any of the audit expenses. As far as donors that are covering the elections, we do have donors that have covered certain of the salaries expenses related to the fair provisions, fair campaigns provision assistant, that's covered. The payroll for the national election supervisor are paying in, there's three installments of that. So we had donors that covered the first installment, and they are working, and I'm working with them to try to determine if there's other individuals that can help. Since there were two that covered the first one, we're working to see if those two would be willing to cover the second, but they're also reaching out to other individuals to help cover that second payment as well. We have a couple of people that have stepped up and said that they would be willing to cover that, but it isn't a – we also have other expenses that are connected to that, and since part of the election was extended a tad, that added extra expenses to the payroll payments for the national election supervisor and the fair campaigns provision assistant. So we have donors that are willing to cover, but we're still searching for donors that are guaranteed to cover that second and third installment of the payment. And then we also have, again, the other expenses that are associated with the election, including any sort of printing of paper ballots that need to go out, postage, the simply voting aspects of dealing with the elections, a PO box that we would have the paper ballots be sent to, the mailing list, housing, you know, the mailers that go out through Constant Contact and any e-blasts, those are expenses as well. So we do have somebody that is covering that. So we're not concerned right now about covering that monthly fee, but there are, you know, continued expenses with the elections. I've asked individuals if they would be willing to make a donation to help cover and offset the cost of some of the paper ballots, of the printing and the mailing, and not asking people if they want a paper ballot that they have to pay for that, but just asking if there are individuals that could help offset some of those costs for individuals that can't. And we've had a few people that have made donations toward the elections, and they're directed towards the Pacifica.org website, and they earmark it toward elections. But so far, we've received about probably $35.
All right. Yeah, we should be constantly driving
Teresa,
people.
Teresa, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up because we have some other people.
Yeah, I would like to wrap, but I do have another question.
Go ahead.
Okay. Do we have any specific plans to repay the $30,000 to affiliates?
Yes, we do. From the proceeds of the sale of the Los Angeles building, we have made a commitment to pay back funds that were those funds that were borrowed from the affiliates. We also have an obligation to pay back funds that were taken from KPFA. And then we have, at that point, then we'll have other obligations with some of our aged payables that we have made commitments that we need to pay them back as well. But we are
thank you very much, Stephanie.
To,
thank
yeah,
you.
No problem.
Thank you, Teresa and Stephanie. Kamau.
Evening, Stephanie. I apologize if I've asked this before, but our general manager tends to take a lot of arrows when it comes to outstanding payables and at the various meetings with regards to some of the decision-making in and around what's being paid. Can you kind of give an idea or give us a sense, are you working in concert with local GMs to determine which payables are prioritized and how does that work so we can kind of, I can kind of calm the savage beast a bit and understand exactly how the decision making is done locally around these payables. Can you give me some insight there?
Yes, we do work both. Markeisha works with the business managers at the stations more so than I, but I do I do talk to them every week or every couple of weeks because I'm making a report for the national office, I mean for the national board, as to what their aged payables are, what's the cash on hand, not just cash in the bank, but cash that can be spent, because you may have a lot of cash in the bank, but then some of that has already been earmarked toward, you know, payroll or earmarked towards something, and most of the divisions will then give me a breakdown as to what those are, and then what the aged payables are. And honestly, there's not a great grasp of what some of these aged payables are. Sometimes there'll be a bill that will be paid. I haven't heard this from WPFW, though, but, there'll be a bill that will be paid, and all of a sudden Markeisha and I will be like, how'd you get that money for that? Where did that come from? And who's not getting paid because you're paying that bill, which is why we want to implement a centralized check request system, so when people have their invoices, even if they don't have the money for it, they give us those invoices, and we have a check request, and we can keep better track of money in and money out. But I do get from WPFW a list of their aged payables from the business manager there.
Okay. One follow-up. So I guess then it's a mixed bag that the part, how we prioritize the payables is can go one way or the other. Markeisha could have input. It could automatically just be done locally. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yeah, the majority of it is done by is a decision by the business managers at each individual station. I don't want to micromanage everyone, but it does make me very uncomfortable to not know what bills are being paid and how they're being prioritized. Again, which is why both Markeisha and I, and also Netta, when we were working with them, wanted to implement and put into place an invoicing system so we know exactly what bills are due, when they're due. We can put in check requests and cut the checks on a certain day, you know, two times a month. We have the paperwork that backs it up. We put it next to, you know, charge it against the accounts that it needs to be charged against. Because right now, everything is based upon the business managers, if the stations have them, at their discretion as to what can be paid. Usually, I'll get involved only when the vendor is wanting, hasn't been contacted in a while, or there's quite a bit of money that's past due, and then I will start working with them to arrange a payment plan and try to get to the bottom of what's been paid and what hasn't been paid.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Kamau. Beth.
Thank you. First, thank you for your report, Stephanie. And I wanted to ask if maybe we could have those figures in writing, please. And thank you for the update on the elections funding. That feels a little precarious. On another item, I understand that Pacifica has had the offer of a loan on favorable terms, enough to retire the FJC loan and then some. What more can you tell us about this offer?
I want to be careful. I don't know if this is a open session or a closed session. There has been someone that has come forward.
This is an open session. This is an open session. We can go to closed session if you want.
I can hold it for closed session if that would be appropriate. But I do want to address it.
The terms may not be as favorable as rumors that are out there. I'll put it that way.
Could I ask that we do go into closed session to talk about the particulars? Because I'd like to check the dollar figures I have against what you've been told and ask further. At what point was the PNB going to be informed about this so that we could give it appropriate consideration?
Probably at the next PNB meeting.
And that's before, Would that be before or after?
One time.
Regarding the loan, but, you know, I'm hesitant to get a loan, to pay off a loan that still uses the same building as collateral with basically, rather than owing $2.7 million to SJC, with this other loan, we would owe $3 million. So we may be paying off one loan, but we've just increased our debt by $300,000.
Well, if we are going to talk about the particulars here in open session, then, my understanding was that the offer was for $3.5 million for 30 years instead of a balloon payment due next year at 12.4% fixed interest, which I realize is higher than what interest used to be, but it's a lot lower than the penalties that we're paying FJC now, and that there would be a pre-penalty for the first for penalty for prepayment for the first year only, and that after that, if we found a way to pay down the loan entirely, we would be free to do that, and there would be minimal fees for appraisal, underwriting, and environmental regulation check, but that would be true, you know, of any sale. So it would allow us to get out from under the burden of the loan from FJC with enough left over to pay down the most urgent of the aged payables and, for instance, the audit. And the elections that are necessary now. And we would still be in possession of a property that houses three of the eight units. That's a functional property. It has, yes, it has financial value, which is minimized at this point in the real estate market. This is about the worst time ever to try to cash out the value of a real estate asset, but it also has inherent value for its functionality. If the station moves out of that location, it will mean permanently increased expenses no matter where we end up. So just as a means to maintain our stability and keep our costs as low as possible, I would hope that the PNB would be given the full particulars of this so that they could make a fully informed decision about it before a sale was made, rather than waiting until after the deal was done. Because I do think this decision belongs to the board and shouldn't be made without the board even knowing that it's an option. Thank you.
Kim, to the staff.
Before you go, Kim, I think Stephanie was asked some questions.
No, let Stephanie go. That's fine.
Yeah. And Stephanie, if you feel like we need to go to executive session to answer any of those questions, just say so, and then we'll deal with that question.
Hold on, please.
I want to remind everybody we're at 10:07, which is 8 minutes from our time certain, so we would need to extend.
Point of order.
I heard a point of order. Who is that?
This is Teresa.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I think if we discuss this any further without even asking the ED's opinion on it, that we ought to go into executive session if we're going to continue this conversation at all, because she might not feel comfortable in open session, and I don't want anything to come out where she would be like confronted with something that she would not want to say in open session.
That's why I asked her if she wanted to do that. So,
I'm open to that.
So, Stephanie, do you want to, what would you, I thought you were trying to speak. Did you want to try to go to a closed session?
If we could, that would be fine, because there's a lot of information of what was the information that Beth has that is not at all close to what what paperwork I've received from a potential lender.
And it would be a potential contract, so that would we would want to do that in closed session as well, right?
Correct. And there's still terms of the lending agreement that we're still we're still discussing, because the terms that were sent to me are not at all close to what was stated.
Okay. So, I think to discuss this, we would need a motion to go to closed session now.
I move to go to closed session. Teresa Allen.
Is that Teresa?
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Jane.
Hold on. We have a point of order. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. We're required to say in advance if we're going to executive session, give notice and all of that. I know the PNB does some things differently. I'm not sure about that stuff being okay. But I must raise the point that there's nothing on KPFTX. We have given no notice of going to an executive session.
James.
Okay, Paul, I would. I'm sorry, did I hear someone speak?
Yes, but I'll let you respond first.
Okay, yeah.
And Julie to the stack.
So, Paul, I wanted to ask you, who requires us or what requires us to give a 7-day notice to go to executive session? And let's try that one first, then I have another question.
That one first? I believe the bylaws require meetings to do it, but also CPB, which we aren't in yet. However, the CPB copies the FCC rules. So going up to the top of the ladder, from what I've been told, it's the FCC that requires notices for executive sessions. There's also the possibility, and I'm not sure of this part, there's also the possibility that because we're 501c3, that also that there are state requirements that you give notice of executive sessions.
And the notices of executive session are for who? I mean, I know that some people have not noticed executive sessions with the understanding that since the public is not invited, the public doesn't need to know. What's the other reason, or what other reasons are there for noticing an executive session?
Because,
is it for the members of the committee?
Okay. One, as far as I know, it starts at the FCC and comes down that we have to let people know about, give notice about an executive session. At least this is what we've been told for the past 19 years of this form of governance. Also, and the other part is slipping out of my mind. We're a not-for-profit, and we going into executive session takes us out of the public view. So this is my understanding, and, you know, if people decide to do something, I guess we'll just see how that works. Maybe it would be wonderful if people could really fully determine this one way or another, because I know the PNB does this sort of thing at times, but I feel the need to raise the idea of what I know about going into closed sessions. So there's a point of order.
Oh, okay. That's appreciated, Paul.
Could Julie speak?
Yes. Well, I guess on a point of order, Paul, we can have two speakers on each side, and then
no, the chair rules. Chair rules. If there's an appeal, then we go to doing other things. But right now, I'm raising a point of order. The chair should make a ruling.
Point of information.
Paul, can I take a point of information before ruling?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
Couldn't the chair get any additional information from the chair of the board who does this routinely, who has on KPFTX has this meeting might go into executive session, but she might have some additional information if you would ask her.
I will ask her. Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah, thanks. This is what I wanted to put myself on the stack for. So Jim Sagerton's right. The point of the open meeting, and it's FCC and CPB rules, to have open meetings to discuss open session topics and concepts, et cetera, and that you have to properly notice those meetings by giving people 7 days advance notice so that they can make arrangements to be able to attend. You're not springing open meetings on them at the last second and thereby damping the attendance to hide. Closed sessions do not require, because the public is not invited to closed sessions. Closed sessions do not require us to give 7 days advance notice. And our bylaws also make it quite clear that we can have meetings for emergency reasons. Now, whether this qualifies as an emergency, that might be dubious, but certainly, you know, from time to time, things come up that you cannot predict with 7 days advance notice. And, you know, even if you go into an open session for an emergency meeting, the key there is that it has to be a valid emergency, and you have to at least get the consent of the committee members. This is not an emergency, I don't think, but certainly it's our prerogative. As long as we're really talking about closed session information in the closed session, it's our prerogative to do that. The thing that the CPB does require is that we make timely notice after the meeting of what it was, the reason for the emergency, the closed session. The NFC met to discuss, it met in closed session to discuss a confidential contractual matter. That would be the kind of notice.
Thank you, Julie. And while I don't know if it qualifies as an emergency, but I think one of the things that Director Von Gutten said was that something to the effect of that if we don't discuss this now, the possibility of getting a loan will become moot if we sign a contract for the sale of the building. So am I reading that right, Director Von Gutten?
This offer, as I understand it, has been on the table for a while now, and the PNB doesn't have the information to be able to factor it into the decision about whether to sell the building and how to sell the building and what the other options are. And it just it seems that to make a fully informed decision, we need all the cards on the table
That being said, I'm going to go out on a limb and take a chance here, and without even really fully understanding whether that constitutes an emergency or not, I'm going to rule that we can go into executive session. And now, Paul, will we take two on one side and two on the other and then have a vote? Is that how that goes?
Only if somebody appeals. I think I feel the need to appeal, not to drag everybody up. I think I feel the need to appeal. So I appeal the ruling of the chair.
I appreciate that. And I realize you're trying to protect us. You're not trying to drag everybody down. I get that. So, okay. So now can we have two speakers who would speak on the side of going into executive session? We'll have two that don't. Can I ask for two?
I'll speak. This is Kim. I'd like to speak in favor.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, hold on. Hold on, Kim. Go ahead, Eric Paul.
The way it works is, I don't object to the idea of two and two because we're a little, it's a committee. We're a little bit informal. However, for an appeal, everybody gets to chime in except the chair gets to go first. Then everybody else gets to go once if they want to. And then the chair goes a second time at the end and then you vote.
Okay.
So you decide if you want to do two and two or six and six or whatever.
Okay, well, in the interest of time, and by the way, I notice we're at 10:18 now, and we will need to extend. Is it appropriate, Arpal, to just take a moment to extend time?
Yeah, we should.
Okay. I'm going to ask if we could have an extension of time, and Whoever moves for that should make it, I think, probably a half an hour, I'm sorry to say.
Oh.
I heard that editorial comment, by the way.
Yeah.
But anyway, would someone move to extend, please?
I move to extend.
I'm sorry, I heard two people. Yeah, go ahead, Teresa.
Alan for the stack. I move to extend for 20 minutes, but that does not mean we have to add that we have to use it all.
Understood. Is there a second?
I need one.
Well, no, we don't need a second. Is there any discussion? Okay, we're any objection? Okay, we're extended for 20 minutes. Now, can we have, I heard Kim offer to speak on which side, Kim?
In support of you.
Okay.
In support of the chair.
Anyone else?
I'll speak, but.
I'm looking for speakers in support of my ruling to go into executive. Arpal, I assume you would be against.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else in support of the ruling of the chair? Perhaps Beth?
Sure, I will. Yeah.
Okay. And those, against, I think we have.
Two and two. Just let people speak. You don't have to have two and two.
Well, I want to do this in the interest of time.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to vote.
So, Arpal, can we assume, put you down as someone to speak in favor? Or against, I'm sorry?
Against, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else against?
That
what are you
doing? Proceed. Come on.
Excuse me. That's out of order. Please just wait. Arpal, what do we do if we don't have two and two?
Just. Then you're lucky. Just ask, and you know who wants to go and speak for. You don't have to even have this was for, this was against. Just ask who wants to be on the stack, and people, whoever wants to be on, will choose how they're going to speak. That's fast.
Okay. We were trying to do two and two to save some time. That's not apparently working. Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we just we're going to go with the two that offered to speak on behalf of the ruling of the chair. Go ahead, Kim.
I'm going to further support what Julie said, and I recall, although I don't have it in front of me, that in the CPB rules, which are the FCC rules, it says you can go into closed session at any time. They have specific rules for open meetings because that involves the public, but there's nothing that's preventing us from just, you know, shutting off the stream and discussing what we need to do right now. That's it. Thank you. I'm going to vote for the chair, and I hope we can come to a vote very soon.
Thank you. Arpal?
Yeah, I just want to say part of this is prompted by some years ago, some very serious lectures from Pacifica, a previous Pacifica General Counsel and other lawyers who really insisted that we couldn't do this. But, you know, so there we are. I hope that if we do this, which it looks like we're going to, that we don't screw things up and mess up our attempt to get into the CPB with it. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Arpal. Beth?
Yes. I would like to say that I agree with Kim. Take note, that makes this a historic day. I agree with everything she said. It's the way we manage public session and nonprofit meetings in California. I think we should have a standard notice as such on at the bottom of every agenda to let the public and members know that if necessary, things like this come up, time-sensitive information pertinent to time-sensitive decisions, that we actually have a responsibility to go into closed session so that we can receive the information and we're not being asked to make decisions blind. So So I think this is the responsible thing to do. If any decisions are made, they'll be reported out as is standard practice. And so I support the ruling of the chair. Thank you.
Thank you. And now it's the chair's turn to speak, I think. And I will say simply that I am concerned about the things that our Paul has raised as far as whether or not we can find ourselves in trouble for doing this. On the other hand, I take into consideration the things that Julie has said, and I'm perhaps going to step out of order here a little bit. I want to ask Julie if she knows anything about the things that our Paul has said about FCC and other. Someone's got an open mic, I think. Julie, can you respond to my question, which is, do you know anything about this, these things that our Paul is mentioning, FCC? And I believe in the past, this going to executive session may have been abused in Pacifica, and that may be part of the historical concern. But what about, you know, possible issues with FCC and any other governmental agency, IRS, whatever it may be?
I mean, I don't know about IRS regulations on this. I would be surprised if there were IRS regulations on this, to be honest. My understanding is that the CPB regs copy at least some portion of, though maybe not entirely, or maybe they add to stuff that's in the 1934 Communications Act, which is what people often call the FCC regs, although strictly speaking, it's statute and not regulations. And so I think we're on solid territory. I suspect you're right about there may be have been some abuse of executive privilege in the past, or executive sessions in the past. And if that were the case, that would certainly explain why a former general counsel for the foundation would have given the advice that we shouldn't do that, right? But the point wasn't don't go into an executive session. It was don't go into executive session to talk about what should be discussed in open session. And I agree that what we would talk about is, strictly speaking, closed session material.
Thank you, Julie. All right, so I'm going to just go ahead and say that.
James, can I read the regulation? It's one sentence.
Go ahead.
This is from the CPB website. When may a meeting be closed? The Act allows stations to close meetings or to close and when discussing any of the following, blah, 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 matters concerning individual employees, proprietary information, litigation, you know, commercial or financial information. So we can close this open meeting right now and do this.
We're familiar. I'm familiar with those CPB regs, but we're not really regulated by them at the moment because we're not participating in the program. We're not members.
That's why we care about it because we want to.
We're applying, yeah, but I don't think they can hold it against us when we're not.
Mr. Chair, can I suggest that the chair, that everyone's had their say and now it's time to go to a vote?
I believe
that's
correct.
Further discussion?
I believe that's correct. And so, R. Paul, you were the secretary. Would you please take the role? A yes is to support the chair. A no is to.
Okay. The way we do it is the motion is. Do you support the chair's ruling? So yes means yes, and no means you don't support the chair's ruling. So please answer.
Point of information, may not the chair just ask to start with, is there any objection to support
the
chair?
There is objection.
Okay.
No, there's objection. Yeah, I'm clear on that. Go ahead, R. Paul.
Okay, please answer up when you hear your name. Teresa Allen.
I support the chair, yes.
Sharon Adams.
Yes, I support the chair.
Elizabeth Von Gunten.
Yes, in support of the chair.
Kamau Harris.
Yes.
Julie Hewitt.
Yes.
Jim Kaufman.
Yes.
R. Paul Martin. No. James McFadden.
Yes.
Sean Kelly McPherson. James Sagerton.
Yes.
Okay, 8-4, 1 against. So the chair's ruling is upheld.
Thank you, R. Paul. So, Fred, we need to go to executive session, which means we need to temporarily turn off the stream, and then we probably need to come back to stand and report and to conclude whatever we can of the agenda if there's any time. So
I'm present. I'll cut the stream now.